Welcome to Heartspeak Podcast, episode 288. Solar eclipse, healing, and activation of serpent energies.
Welcome to the Heartspeak Podcast, where valuable insights are shared that bypass the mind and resonate with the heart. Listen, open your heart, become inspired, find the joy and fulfillment that awaits when you follow your heart. And now, here's your host, Dr. Christine Page.
Well, hello there, wherever you are in the world. It's good to be back with you. And yes, April is definitely a very active month. We've already seen Mercury turning retrograde on the 2nd and will continue to the 25th of April. And that is in Aries. And Mercury is all about communication, sharing, learning. So there's a lot going on in that field that I'll talk a little bit more about later. But we also have this conjunction between Jupiter and Uranus coming up around the 20th of April. Again, that I think is tying into this solar eclipse, which is a total solar eclipse on the 8th of April. Now, the path of this total solar eclipse, which is about 150 miles apart, that is the width of it, goes from the northern areas of Mexico, coming in, crossing up through some of the southern states, and then going up through the eastern states of the United States, into Canada, touching Niagara Falls, Ottawa, before going out through Nova Scotia, etc., into the Atlantic. And as I was reading about this particular solar eclipse, I noticed that we are really talking about so much activation, not only of some of the important sites within the Earth's energies, but also within our own energies. Often we call it the Kundalini energy. And that Kundalini meaning the serpent goddess, is really saying to me that this particular eclipse, being in Aries, again, Aries linked to the base chakra, the place where we see Kundalini living, is an activation of those Kundalini serpent energies, both within us and within the earth. And I want to bring all of that together for you today. So let's just start at the beginning. It's always a good place to start. And what is a solar eclipse? As I mentioned before, it's when the moon, sun, and earth line up to the point where the moon appears to cover the brilliant light of the sun. And therefore, this is what we call a total solar eclipse. Does this for about 4.5 minutes if you are in that path of total eclipse. And even if you're on the edges, you will see it for the same sort of time. Now, what does this actually mean? For many, moon or lunar eclipses are much more dangerous. The idea that the moon has this emotional energy, more chaotic. And solar eclipses are often seen as entering into a darkness. And because this is at a new moon, it really goes along with the same ideas of what I call the dark moon time. So we have this time of going into the darkness, dying to the old parts of ourselves, and then being in that darkness for 4 minutes, and then coming out and a new you is born. And there are various astrology understandings around this, and we're just going to focus at the moment on the fact that this particular solar eclipse is in Aries. So what is Aries? Aries is the adventurer, the young, I always see it as a young boy about to say, yes, I'm off to do my thing. Aries isn't particularly deep, if I may say. It tends to do something and then think, oh, maybe I'll learn from that experience and move forward. But it doesn't take on all the complicated emotions of the later signs of the zodiac. Aries is about your authority. So that's why I call it the little boy. It's often about the young child, boy or girl, leaving home, becoming their own inner hero. So when the solar eclipse is in Aries, it's encouraging us all to step out. Maybe step out and do something alone. Maybe step out and do those things you've always been talking about. become that self-empowered individual. I am. Now, at this time, so this is the sun and moon in Aries on top of each other on that day. It's at 19 degrees. So if you particularly have anything in your chart around 19 degrees, obviously Aries or its opposite Libra are very significant. But if you have anything around 19 degrees, you may feel this urge to do something different, be different. And it may be tied in very closely because what's in the middle of all of this is Chiron. Chiron, the wounded healer. So if you have Chiron in Aries in your chart, which is often where you are born, maybe, if I may say, around 1970, 72, the early 70s, you will find that maybe up till now, you want to step out on your own, but you've always been held back and you're waiting for someone else to do it with you. And you might even be part of an organization. So you're always having to be part of something and almost giving authority to that organization or to someone else before you step out. Now, even if you weren't born in those years, this time, because Chiron is there at this solar eclipse that says, come on, let's step out into the sunlight. You may also find that stepping away from the family or your friends or an organization and just say, no, I'm going to do this alone. Now, doesn't mean you have to do it alone, but you are the authority of the innovative idea that you're having. So you're innovating yourself and other people will come and join you, but you're willing to do it in this way. Now, Chiron is a asteroid that sits between Saturn and Uranus, and it affects the Achilles heel. So what is very interesting is that Saturn is, of course, restriction. Uranus is about doing something unique. So again, around this time, you might find yourself doing something very unexpected, out of the blue. Wow, what's she doing? And that's going to be exemplified again by this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction on the 20th, where we're seeing an expansion of unusual ideas or expansion of unusual experiences. Now, I've got to say that that could be earthquakes because, again, Jupiter and Uranus now are in Taurus. So it could be something that comes out of the earth suddenly. But I'm also seeing, as I wanted to say, this sort of activation of earth energies, activation of your body's energies, because Taurus also relates to the body. So just coming back to Chiron being in Aries, something may happen that you are going to look after your body in a different way, or you're going to be more connected to the earth in a different way, or you're going to eat differently, or something's going to happen, but it may involve something, as I say, that is more earthy or body-centered. Maybe you take up Kundalini meditations. So something happening where you're saying, I'm going to fire myself up in a new way. Now, what's interesting about Chiron is that he was born half man, half horse, half immortal, half mortal. I won't get into the complications of his parents, but his problem was not being abandoned by his parents. That was the best thing that ever happened. But because he's half mortal and half immortal, he can't die of a wound to his Achilles heel that occurs. So he becomes the wounded healer where he heals everybody else of their wounds, but he can't heal himself. In other words, he can't die from his wounds and he can't heal himself. And eventually he manages to change places with Perseus and actually manages to die as a mortal and is then recognized and sent into the sky as an immortal. So sometimes with Chiron, we have to die to our immortality, come down to earth, be more earthy before we can be reborn. And this idea of the immortal and immortality is very interesting because the whole idea of a solar eclipse or any eclipse is based on two figures from Hindu traditions, also included in the Buddha traditions, Rahu and Ketu. Now, I mentioned a couple of podcasts ago when I was in Cambodia, we looked at the whole story of the churning of the milk, the sacred milk or the churning of the milk of the sea. And this really represented how we evolve as human beings from our both mortal self and our immortal self, how we work together. Now, the end of that story is that when the sea of milk has been churned by these two opposites, the Asuras and the Devas, they produce this Amrita, which is the enlightenment, the golden elixir of eternity that is in many cultures. But just as the Devas are going to eat or drink this, this more demon-like character steps across and swallows some of it. And as it seemed to be swallowed, the Devas call out to the gods and say, "Oh no!" So the gods, and I think it's Vishnu, strikes the head of this serpent. So the serpent now has a head which is immortal because it swallowed the Amrita, and the immortal, which is Keto, which is, hasn't swallowed the Amrita. So this really signifies this story, similar to Chiron, that there's an immortal part of ourselves, we call our spirit, and there's a mortal part of ourselves, which is we could call our human. And that we are here to try and blend the two together. But in the stories that we see coming out of Hinduism about this Rahu and Ketu, they describe that Rahu is so upset that his head was chopped off that he chases the sun and moon across the sky. And when he catches them, he swallows them, hence an eclipse. But because he doesn't have a body, because his head was chopped off, they escape out the other side. I love the story. So every eclipse is about Rahu, who's rather mischievous and always and a little angry because his head was chopped off his body. He catches the sun and moon, causes the darkness, but because he hasn't got a neck, they escape out his neck, and then we see the sun and moon again. Great story. So this whole idea, and this, may I say, is the north and south node. If you know anything about astrology, Rahu is the north node, Keto is the south node, and Rahu is where we're moving towards, and Keto is where we're coming from. But you know, you could say Rahu's a little bit of a problem anyway, but together we are trying to become our combined mortal and immortal selves, our spiritual human beings. And that's what we're aiming for, not to be totally immortal, not to be total mortal, but to come together. And this eclipse is really saying, bring heaven onto earth, but also earth onto heaven. It's not a one way, it's an infinity sign. I hope that's making sense to you. So Chiron, going back to Chiron, it's healing the parts of us that feel separate. That's really what I want to say. It's healing the parts of us who don't feel we belong. It's healing the parts of us who don't think we're in our power. It's healing our victimhood, if I've got to say it in those words. So wherever you feel a victim or not enough or you don't deserve, that's that split between your head and your tail. It's Chiron wound, the wound of separation. So now is the time to bring them together and to realize you are in your power, you have an authority. And what is helping you is Mercury just happens to be there with you, whoopee, at that same place of that solar eclipse on the 8th of April. So it's now communicating between your head and your heart, head and your body, but it's also maybe writing down your wounds or communicating to someone that you are wounded. Or it may just be knowing, listening to yourself. But it isn't about staying in it. It's about once I express it, once I know it to be true, I need to move out of this space. So Mercury may, you might find yourself getting more angry or more, you know, wanting to tell everybody how wounded you are. But this is a great time to say, okay, I'm going to speak it. But if I stay in that place and just keep telling the story, I'm never going to move on. And that's what I want you to see. These four particular places coming together, moon and sun, obviously together at 19 degrees at a new moon in Aries on the solar eclipse, but with Chiron and Mercury there as well. Really important that this is a time of healing. Now, it could be a time of war, but I want to say that if we go to war from a victim place, when it's just a pointless, you're just repeating a story. So where am I emerging from a different place and saying, no, I'm not giving authority to you. I'm not going to war against you. I'm not wasting my time. I'm not attacking you. This isn't where I want to go. I have many more important things to do in my life. And what I've recognized in myself is some of the characters who we might say are carrying the leadership roles, the elites. And sometimes we say, oh, wow, they've got a lot of power. I'm looking at them now and saying, no, you're just another human. You're just another human like me. You act as if you're more authoritarian, but you're not. You know better, you know worse. So it's again, taking back our authority from people we might have anxiety about, or we may believe are more powerful than we are. Okay, that I hope is really exciting for you, because that's really the key to what's going on. Now, there are other things that are coming out of these times, and you may have read about them. Some say that it's a lot of conspiracy theories coming out. Now, there's one story is that there was a solar eclipse. First of all, let's go back to maybe I want to say, talk about the Saros cycle. I mentioned before that their solar eclipses follow a particular cycle, 18.6 years, the moon, the sun, the earth all line up. And this is really because the moon doesn't go directly in the same angle around the earth. It moves up and down, and therefore this alignment only happens every 18.6 years. So the last one was in 2006 of this particular Saros cycle, which is the Saros cycle means the cycle of these particular eclipses that occur at this particular link, 18.6 years apart. Let me put it that way. So the last one was actually in March 2006. I know there was one in 2005, which was at the same Aries degree. That's important. But actually, if we're going to follow astronomical events, 2006 is when the last one was. 1998 was another one. And then the 1971 was the one that was the 55 point something years apart, three times 18.6. So I'm wanting you to understand that, yes, there may be a link with an astrological event, but as an astronomical event, what you were doing in 1970, what you were doing, I think it's in March 1988, March 1988, March 2006, and now are all linked together. Okay, just want to put that out. Now there are those who are looking at what happened in August 2017, where we had a total solar eclipse crossing across the United States. And there have been stories coming up about how they cross at these particular points, which are all connected to Nineveh. So who's Nineveh? She is Ishtar, Inanna. Ishtar, the name comes from the queen of the stars. So again, this sense of, is this saying some connection to the stars? Are we awakening things in the stars that I want to come back to? Now, when you actually look at it, there aren't so many crosses. Some people have said there are nine times, but certainly where they do cross, there is this connection with a couple of Ninevehs in America. Now, you've got to understand that those crosses are occurring where there is very strong what we call the Bible Belt. So there are a lot of references, towns named after important biblical names. So it's probably not surprising that we see all these biblical names occurring around that time. Now, what then we need to look at, however, is that one of the names also that comes at this crossing point, is which is just south of St. Louis, is actually named the Ark. And if I look at Michael Saylor's work, and it's worth looking at his work, and I will put his link into the YouTube and into the website, the arcs are definitely becoming more and more important. Now, I've spoken about the arcs before, But these arcs are said to be located in specific places around the world. One was at the Bermuda Triangle, but has now been moved, according to Michael Sala. One is in Ukraine, one is in Russia, one is in Europe, one is in Antarctica, one is in the Americas. I think I'll stop at that point. There are many. And his information is that these are deeply buried in either the waters or in the oceans, sometimes in the soil, but that they contain information that was put into this sacred ark for future generations to be able to access when the time was right. Now, this means that our ancestors, thousands of years ago, buried these arks. And again, if you're interested in looking at them, do go into Michael Sala's work. But what's interesting about them, that he comes up with, there are various reasons why the arks are there and why they're being activated at this time, because that is what's happening. These arks are being activated primarily to bring this information back to us at this time. There is also talk that the arks contain sleeping giants. And if you've read any work by perhaps people like Hugh Newman, he talks about these giants who have lived on the planet many thousands of years ago. They found skeletons. So some of these so-called giants are living on these arcs, sleeping and waiting to be awakened. Now, I also suggest that some of these giants are already living on this earth. You might say in an art, but I have come across sleeping areas such as in Montana, where I know that there are beings living in the stones waiting to be awakened. There's also the understanding that the arcs may be being activated and therefore heating up an area. So I'm just saying during the activation, we're seeing a melting of snows, as we're seeing in the Antarctica, where there's believed to be an arc. We're seeing a change in the earth energies because of them being activated. Now, don't ask me how big these are, but I think they're fairly large, and the activation causes this heat of the waters of the land, etc. And the reason they're being activated, a second idea that Michael Sala puts across, is they are there in case we need to leave this planet, because the planet is going through its changes. I think that's happened in past times. I've certainly got memories of that. It also, there's a suggestion, this might be a place where you could go and live for a while until the planet sorts itself out. But I really like the idea that it contains energy. It's not just a place for us to go in there two by two, as we know by Noah's Ark. That's why they were called arks. And I feel that that information is consciousness. It's literally consciousness going into the waters, consciousness going into the land. And again, this idea of the serpent energies being activated. I hope you're with me. And where I describe the dragon lines or the ley lines, especially the dragon lines being the blood vessels of the earth, ley lines being the capillaries. And I feel that these arcs are connected to the center of Mother Earth. And as they are awakened, they're not in separation, they're plugged in to her heart. As they're being activated, the energy is being passed out through the dragon energies of the earth, the ley lines, into our own dragon energies, our own inner meridians, you might want to call them, but also our kundalini. And I feel that that's what is shifting. Not just awakening, but activation. And activation feels more dynamic and it's more connected to Aries. And coming back to the idea that this new moon, sun, moon, Chiron, etc., is an activation of our serpent energies, as again called our kundalini energy, base chakra. Base chakra is connected, as I said, to our ancestral chi. So it's almost like we're getting this download or upload of strong ancestral energy at this time. And so I'm really going to advocate, rather than meditating out your body, get into your body at this time, because the energies are coming up from the deep. They're not coming down from above. And I think that darkness of the solar eclipse, be it just 4.5 minutes, is really saying focus on what's coming up rather than focus what's coming from the sky. So this activation is happening. These arcs, these places of consciousness are awakening. And I think that's what's now running through the blood vessels of the earth, running through our inner blood vessels. We could say the chakras, the lines that connect the chakras, the nadis, all of this is being activated. I hope this is exciting you. This isn't a one-day event. This is what we've been waiting for. And that activation is going to cause disruption, both to ourselves individually, you know, physically, mentally, but also around the earth. It's like, where am I going to put this energy? So find something you can put your energy into. Beyond the arcs, there are also funny things happening, and you may have read about these, and these are the final things I want to talk about. One thing that's happening is CERN, as you may know, which is this Hadron Collider out in Switzerland, hasn't been active for 2.5 years. All of a sudden, they've decided to turn it on April the 8th. What? Now, you might know that they're trying to find the God particle, they're trying to find dark matter, all of those things. And truly, that we've learned dark matter doesn't exist. It's all about plasma, and I've talked about that and maybe talk about it again. But what we do know, and we suspect with CERN, is they're also trying to make a black hole, a wormhole into other dimensions. Because when those electrons, protons, whatever it is that they're colliding, meet, we have that idea that this is going to create that wormhole. And we believe they've already done that. So turning this on April the 8th is really weird, and has that idea that somehow they are trying to make more connections with multidimensional levels. And wormholes don't just exist out in space. They're here in our body. Our DNA has wormholes. We have wormholes everywhere. It's just a passageway between a null point or black hole into the white hole. So wherever we go into these places that are sacred, we develop these wormholes. And I want to make sure I finish with that. So CERN is turning on this. We have no idea why that's happening. NASA is firing 3 rockets into the darkness of their ionosphere that occurs at a solar eclipse. Again, there are lots of theories why that's happening. They are saying that they're wanting to measure the energy of the ionosphere, which is really made up of sun particles, during a solar eclipse to see what happens. That's not unreasonable, because we know at nighttime the ionosphere becomes very low in its charge. So maybe they're trying to compare notes. There's another theory, and I couldn't believe that they're also saying that they are wanting, and they've called, maybe I just want to say this, and I'm now just looking at its name. There is a name for the dark, chaotic energy that is seen in Egypt. And that was a word I hadn't come across, was Apep, A-P-E-P. And this is seen as the nemesis of the sun god. So Apep is often, again, like Rahu and Keto, is seen as to cause eclipses because it steals the sun. So fine, Apep, it's like, great. So there, you know, there's this idea that by the Egyptian understanding, mythology, that this is the stealing of the sun. But I couldn't believe that NASA has actually described their discovery or looking at the sunlight and the ionosphere as atmospheric perturbations around the ecliptic path, Apep. They're actually calling it Apep by that long description. Okay. So it's they're pulling in this energy of chaos and destruction that Apep represents at this time of the solar eclipse. Brilliant. Now, the third idea that Michael Salah has is that they are saying that if we are all looking at this darkness that occurs at the solar eclipse with our special glasses on, we may see things happening around the sun that we couldn't see if the sun was very bright. And that if we do see spaceships or anything around there, this can be explained by NASA as their rockets that they sent into this ionosphere. I like that idea as well. So if you are able to look at this total solar eclipse with your special glasses on, then maybe you're going to see other things out there for that 4 minutes that you wouldn't have seen otherwise. Now, my final piece here is this activation. And again, I've talked about it personally, talked about it in the Earth, but I was also interested to look at, is this path of this total solar eclipse on the 8th passing over any sacred sites? It comes in through northern Mexico. There is a very unusual biosphere park there in New Mexico, in Mexico, that is being affected by the solar eclipse. It comes across San Antonio, Dallas, and we visited the Enchanted Mountain near San Antonio. Certainly has a lot of quartz in it that shines. This certainly will be affected by this eclipse. But it then moves on to somewhere I've also visited, is Serpent Mound in Ohio. And that is going to be caught in this total solar eclipse. This is a really extraordinary mound that connects to the mound makers. But this is so unique that it's aligned to true north. It has a connection that is awakened by these different solar events. So is Serpent Mound waking up? I believe so. There's also a mound near St. Louis called Cahokia that's connected to Serpent Mound, but I think they're built at different times. But this is also going to be in this way. Niagara Falls, whether it's a sacred site, it's an amazing place. They say that 1 million people are going to visit on this eclipse. They've actually closed it, I think, or trying to close it. That's being affected. Ottawa's being affected. Again, moving out to Nova Scotia and Newfoundland, these are very sacred places. So I feel that all of these times where we have solar eclipses, there is an awakening of serpent energies. And according to certain people who have studied energy lines and energies, there are times in the year when there is an alignment that is the perfect time for volcanoes to happen, sun flares to happen, even unfortunately the testing of nuclear devices. But it's not necessary that they're just doing the testing. They understand when the alignment is right between the heavens and the earth, earth energies, solar eclipse, etc., then their portals are opened into these new ways. And I believe that is what we are going to see. So I know I've covered a lot of ground. I hope you found it useful. Please let me know if there are any questions. And I will certainly put some of the links that I've talked about under the YouTube or on my website. Have a wonderful week. Take care. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the HeartSpeak Podcast with Dr. Christine Page. Please check out all HeartSpeak episodes in the podcast archive section on www.christinepage.com. HeartSpeak is also available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Tumblr, and now playing on Amazon Music and iHeartRadio. You can also watch the archive podcast on Christine's channel on YouTube and now on Rumble. Connect with Christine on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook group, The Great Mother Calling. Do share with family, friends, colleagues. Join us next time for another edition of HeartSpeak.